This is the Education Gadfly Show.
You know, there were some really cold nights, Mike, and, you know,
you curled up with a policy book.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. You're at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my special guest for this week, the Kate Middleton of Education Policy, Bib Hubbard. Bib, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, and I love the Kate Middleton reference.
Yes, well, you and Alyssa Schwenk is here with us as well, Alyssa.
Hey, Mike, and I will, for I think the third time this year, take Meghan Markle then.
Meghan, oh, there it is. You want to be the Meghan Markle, that's fine. Hey, yes, talking, of course, that Kate had her third child, a son, and Alyssa says it's Louis
Arthur Charles.
Not Louis. Louis.
No, it's like how you pronounce that name. It's
in British? In English?
Yes.
Too? I mean, it sounds French.
Louis
sounds
Armstrong spelled his name that way.
I'm not convinced. What do you think? But you
clearly
you like
they don't think
he'll
get on the
crown. You said, Kate, that she was channeling her inner Diana.
Yes, with her lovely dress when she left the hospital. It was a very similar dress to what Diana wore.
And I noticed people commenting about, like, this is not normal for some, you know, for a mother who just gave birth to come out of the hospital looking this good.
It was, with especially an 8-pound child.
Yes. Yeah. She's also not a normal person. She is a duchess.
Like, yes.
Most of us are not duchesses.
All right. Well, Bib is not a duchess, but she is the founder and president of Learning Heroes. And that, did you like that segue?
I did like that segue. I'll take it.
And we're going to talk about what Learning Heroes is. We work a ton with Bib and we're huge fans of what she's been up to, trying to help parents understand how they can help their kid in school and also think about why do so many parents think their kids are doing fine when maybe that's not the case. So we're going to talk about all of that in the Ed Reform Update. So Bib, start this off. Tell us real quickly, what is Learning Heroes and what are you guys trying to do?
Learning Heroes, our simple mission is to inform and equip parents so they can best help their children's educational success.
Yeah.
And so we do that through a variety of ways, mostly through partners who parents trust to know, like the PTAs, their local churches, community-based organizations. But we start with listening to parents. So when I founded Learning Heroes 3.5 years ago, I found that there was a dearth of understanding of how parents felt, talked, prioritized, helped raise their children as it relates to education.
Yeah.
And so as we started to do the research, I was quite humbled to realize how much we didn't know.
Well, and this is kind of a branch of the standards-based reform movement focused on parents, right? I mean, we've had this big effort in the last decade to raise standards, tougher assessments, stronger accountability systems for schools. We hope better information for parents about how their kids are doing. And yet nobody was paying a lot of attention on how these messages were actually getting to parents or not getting to them, right? Until you guys started doing some work. And as you said, you found that the way that we wonks talk about this stuff and that states talk about this stuff was not working for parents.
Yeah, we found that there is a lot of good intentions out there in communicating with parents, but a lot of assumptions. So what we're sending to parents is not being understood or received or is too complicated to access. So we found a huge disconnect in that 90% of parents, and this is regardless of race, income level, education level, geography, you name it, 90% of parents believe their child is at or above grade level in both reading and in math. And if you are familiar with polling, you know 90% is a ridiculous number. Yeah. So 40% is a huge number. 90% of Americans don't like ice cream. Like 90% is really a phenomenal number. So when we uncovered that, it really had us to take a step back and said it actually explained quite a bit about why there has been so much controversy with new standards, aligned assessments, because parents don't know what problem we are trying to solve. Because they feel like, hey, my child's doing okay. You know, 60% of parents say that their child's going to be prepared for success in college.
Yeah.
We know that that number is much lower. And again, this is African-American families, Hispanic families, low-income families. They just have this overinflated view, likely, of how their child is performing.
Well, and many of us were hoping that once the new assessments came along, you know, keep in mind we're only a couple of years into this, 3 years into it. It was 2015 that PARC and Smarter Balanced came in. We see other states raising the bar for proficiency. You know, that we were finally getting to the point where we're closing the honesty gap. Parents are opening up. Maybe opening up these score reports and seeing news that their kids are not proficient, not on track. And yet that has not moved the numbers at all. I mean, you continue every year, you do this poll and it's the same message. So what is happening, Bib?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, parents own the responsibility for their child's in-school success. Only 12% of parents say that that's the teacher's job. Mm-hmm. So I think because most parents rely on report card grades. So 86% mm-hmm. of parents, you know, really just rely on report card grades as their primary indicator, or it's a parent teacher conference, which are just maybe once a year. Mm-hmm. So when it comes time for the state standardized test results to hit home, we see about 56% of parents are actually looking at them and sort of valuing them as they report mm-hmm. it. But that's because they're supposed to report it. Mm-hmm. But when we've also looked at a lot of these score reports, and they are indecipherable too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they use scales in the thousands. They use, you know, margin of error. They are chock full of data that mm-hmm. is just completely confusing.
Yeah.
And so we've asked a lot of parents, like, what does this report mean to you? And they don't know.
Yeah.
They literally don't know.
Have you guys talked at all to parents about sort of their trust levels and kind of how they view institutions and how they view teachers? I know when I was teaching, it was actually... for my kids who were struggling, it was sometimes very tough to have a really honest conversation if I hadn't put in that work to build that trust. And there were families that I was very successful at building that trust and we were able to have a tough conversation. But if we weren't, for whatever reason, like able to have a really trusting relationship, that conversation was just sort of off the table because it didn't go productively.
Yeah, so it's interesting. When you talk to parents, their most trusted messenger is the teacher. Mm-hmm. And again, this is regardless of race, income levels. You know, parents trust their teachers because, again, my child is spending every single day sure. with his teacher yeah, and yep. I'm trusting them. So if I don't trust them, then I'm a bad parent for having them right. in that classroom.
Right.
So parents,
then that's a values judgment.
Right. So there's sort of this cognitive pull that requires parents to trust their teachers. Yet we hear anecdotally and in qualitative, we haven't done a quantitative of teachers yet. We're doing one this summer. Mm-hmm. But qualitatively, we hear from teachers all the time that they don't have as good a relationship with parents. Mm-hmm. For example, I actually do have some data here. So when we ask about you know, what's most important in family engagement, Scholastic did some research with principals and teachers. Mm-hmm. And one of the most important factors is communicating about what's your child's expected to learn, the standards, mm-hmm. as you were saying. Mm-hmm. And so 83% of teachers say it's one of the most important things that should be happening. Only 62% say it's actually happening. Mm-hmm. And only 46% of teachers in high poverty settings say that like that communication mm-hmm. between parents and teachers is happening.
Yeah.
We asked the same question of parents. So 83% of parents say, I'm getting what I need from mm-hmm. my teachers about mm-hmm. my child's standards. And that number jumps to 87% when you look at low income.
Yeah. Wow.
So there is this inverse thing happening.
Yeah.
That the
parents think they're getting what they need.
They do.
And as a parent, look, you mentioned before that we take ownership for our kids. And so it's very hard to hear that our kids aren't doing well because that means that we
exactly.
aren't doing well. We chose a bad school or we're not doing what we need to at home.
Yep.
And so we want to hear that things are okay. And if we open up that report card, and it's all A's and B's, you know, or in the younger grades, whatever crazy letters they
check
use,
marks.
P's and I's and N's or whatever, you know, we want to say, all right, looks fine. They're telling me that my kid is on grade level and they're doing okay. And I keep wondering, you know, how many teachers understand, especially in the early grades, you know, early elementary, you know, do they just understand the raw numbers? Meaning that, look, in this country, you've got to be at about the 60th percentile. At the end of high school in order to be on track for college and college success. If you say that about 40% of kids are ready, it might be more like 70% because of 30% ready, right? In terms of you're not going to end up in a remedial exam course, you know, you're going to really crush it. So being at the 50th percentile is not high enough, right? That means, yes, you're on, you know, your average, but you know, that average is not good enough right now. You've got to be at the 60th. You've got to be at the 70th percentile. And how do we help teachers understand that and embrace it and say, look, I want to make sure that the signals I send to these parents is if their kid, you know, we don't want to freak out, but if their kids are, you know, a little below where they need to be, that the message has got to be, hey, we've got some ground to make up and here's how we're going to do it.
Well, I think that teachers, you know, they self-report being intimidated to be able to have those yep. hard conversations because they don't have the tools, the language, yeah. the time. But we also know that there's more that goes into the report card than just grade level mastery.
Yeah.
You know, it's an important measure of, you know, did my child show up on time? Yeah. Were they a good peer? Mm-hmm. Did they work really hard? Did they work well in teams? Which is not necessarily, is my child reading at grade level? Mm-hmm. And so that's where I think these aligned assessments and those results are so important, because they tell a different story. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's like, okay, parents, you've got all these puzzle pieces that you need to put together. And right now, parents are primarily relying just on, you know, mm-hmm. one or two pieces of the puzzle, the report card grades, if they get any anecdotal feedback mm-hmm. from the teacher. And interestingly, we hear in qualitative, it's the behaviors.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So as a parent, you totally get this, right? Do they have a stomach ache so they don't want to go to school? Mm-hmm. Or do they walk in the door saying, Mike, Dad, oh my gosh, did you know? Mm-hmm. Right? And they're so excited about what they're learning. And then you get that sense as a parent, like, oh, he's yeah. doing great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But by the way, they do walk through the door excited and want to tell me all about Fortnite.
Exactly. I know, right?
Come I'm on, so Nate. Glad I don't know what that is.
Yes. Be very happy that you don't know what that is. Yes. It will take over your child's life soon enough. But anyway, so it's, for us, it's trying yeah. to get parents to look at all these different puzzle pieces yeah. and put it together.
But is that more realistic to get them? I mean, so the one strategy is let's try to figure out how to get the parents to pay attention to the tests. Again, not mm-hmm. as the be all and end all, but as another right. important piece of the puzzle. Or is it to try to get teachers to become tougher graders, you know, to become, you know, to raise the standard when it comes to giving out grades on the report card?
Can't I mean, do you think option C,
which is
both,
what, both or both? We could try both. I mean, do you have any idea whether getting teachers to be tougher graders, is that just,
I think,
am I being completely naive? Mike here.
I think that it's a big lift. And I think it's helping parents understand what is baked into that report card grade. So it isn't necessarily whether or not grade level mastery is happening, and that's why mm-hmm. the end of year assessment result is so important, so that you can look at both, because they're telling you different things yeah. and they're both equally as important, because there's a lot that's important in that report card grade too about your child holistically, mm-hmm. you know, as being sort of a peer and how they're operating within that classroom environment, but it is normative,
yeah.
right?
And if parents don't understand that, like, nobody gets a C these days. So, you know, your kid gets a B, that's actually the worst grade in the class. They probably don't know that.
Well, right. There's also, like, parents care about more than whether or not their kid is just doing math well. They want their kid to be kind and work hard and have Amen. Resiliency and
it's
all of
really
those things.
True.
And so those factor
in. Ridiculous, isn't it?
How dare we hope that our children grow up to be kind individuals who treat each other well. But I guess my big question is, and have we as a movement, like with parents in the standardized test, like that building that trust in a test to give you valuable information about your kid, I think is a pretty high order these days, given, you know, 10, 20 years of people telling parents to be skeptical about the tests. And then we come in with brand new tests that were like, no, these are better. And just there's, I think, a trust issue there that we have to confront about the tests that tricky.
I think this is one area where we could do better with teachers mm-hmm. is helping teachers understand the value of the test, because so many teachers have been left out of that conversation. Mm-hmm. They don't see the test items in advance. They don't see the results mm-hmm. a lot of times. And so they don't have the professional development for how to talk to parents about the results on these tests. And, you know, if you're a teacher, why am I not teaching items that are on this test, because this is supposed to be grade level mastery? Why does my curriculum not match?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If that is happening, and it does happen, let's be honest. So then the teacher could be an advocate to say to the principal, to the district, to the state, why are we dumbing down
yeah.
our mm-hmm. curriculum? That's right. That's not acceptable. Hey. And parents, at some point when this awareness gets raised, imagine a parent who says, wow, and actually there was a DC mom, super involved, Ward 7. Mm-hmm. She actually took the practice test for Park mm-hmm. for her third mm-hmm. grader. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what she said very astutely was, you know, it was too difficult because I know that my child wasn't learning those things this year.
Yeah.
And so what would have been amazing if she could have just carried that thought through to say, hey, I'm going to go to my teacher and say, why didn't my child yeah. learn these things?
Yeah.
If this is what's considered grade level and important for her to be able mm-hmm. to progress, why didn't she learn fractions? And so that would be a really compelling conversation, and sort of where I think, you know, ideally we get to, that there is real value mm-hmm. in these state test results. But first, parents have to understand them. So first we have to make mm-hmm. them decipherable.
Yeah.
So we're still at that early stage.
So much to unpack here and a conversation to continue. This is definitely one of the big remaining to-do items on the education reform
But doable.
List.
It is not insurmountable.
All right, but tough, right. And it's not something you can't pass a law, you can't, but you got to work at this.
You got to be intentional.
All right. Bibb Hubbard, the founder and CEO of Learning Heroes. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
President of Learning Heroes, yes. Founder and president. And hey, you know, maybe they, you know, parents need trusted people to hear from. Kate Middleton. Hello.
Exactly.
I mean, once she's done having babies,
we should get her mental health as a spokesperson.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. David, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Mike.
Yeah, Amber not able to join us this week, and you have been traveling the world.
I have been, yes. I made it to the Everest Base Camp since last time I was on the show.
Super I've been thinking cool. about doing that hike.
And one Bhutan of my as well? Year. Was that right?
Yes, yeah. I stopped off on Bhutan to say hello to my dad.
Casual.
Hello to your dad. I love it. So
go
this
to
is
breweries in rural Virginia to say hello to my dad. I'm just saying.
Wow. No, very, very impressive. The most impressive thing about David's trek to Everest Base Camp, I thought, was that you brought along a thick policy book on education with you.
Nerd.
Which, what were you thinking? But, you know, most people try to limit the weight that they're carrying.
You know, there were some really cold nights, Mike, and, you know, you
curled up with a policy book.
What was it called? Exactly. The EFPP or
AEFP, whatever.
Oh my God, you guys.
It's so full of, anyway.
It is an excellent volume.
I try and convince
people. Did you bring it back, by the way?
I did. I'll give it back to you. I have like 150 pages.
You didn't use any of it for toilet paper.
Okay, moving
on. All right, so that's enough of that. What do you have for us this week, David?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. All right, so I have a study called Do Impacts on Test Scores Even Matter? Lessons from Long-Run Outcomes in School Choice Research, and it's by our friends at AEI, Michael McShane, Pat Wolf, and Colin Hitt.
Boy, this rings a bell.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe because I'm working on my sixth post about this study? Yes. Okay, yeah. But let's hear it from your take.
Well, so I am going to struggle to summarize it here, but I think the short version is they do a very comprehensive lit review of school choice programs, and they basically look to see, is there really a relationship between the sort of test score impacts of those programs and other impacts, such as high school graduation, long-term impacts like college, et cetera. And their conclusion is no. And you've taken issue with that.
Yep.
I am a lot closer to you than I am to them in terms of the takeaway. To me, I have less of a problem with the programs that were included, which you've written about. Mm-hmm. To me, that seems debatable.
Yeah. In other words, they these are supposed to be school choice programs. They included some like career and technical education, selective enrollment schools like Stuyvesant, which I would argue aren't really school choice, but more importantly, our programs are just kind of idiosyncratic, like for reasons depending on
comparability.
Yeah, I mean that, you know, the kind of unique populations and such, you might not expect their test scores and their say college enrollment rates to go in the same direction.
I get your case there. I mean, so to me, my two biggest problems were, first of all, what counts as a mismatch, right?
Yep.
Because they essentially say in order for there to be a match, well, then you have to have positive impacts on test scores and on the other outcome, whatever it is. And then if it's not an exact match like that, then it counts as a mismatch. And I just think that's really, I think that's too strict, right? I mean, to me, a true mismatch is, you know, we have positive significant impacts on graduation and negative significant impacts on test scores, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we should actually worry about, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Because then that's a scenario in which policymakers might actually, you know, be tempted to close down the program or whatever the accountability thing is they're worried about, and actually do harm. But if that's not the case, then I don't really see what is the problem we're trying to solve here.
Right.
For example, right. So they have these really let me make my other point.
All right. Yes.
All right. And then it's sort of a related point, which is, you know, can we really generalize from sort of programs to schools? And we've been talking about this, right?
Yeah.
So the studies they include are kind of dominated by insignificant positive or negative effects, right? Which is because if you take a large enough sample of schools, right? I mean, most education interventions don't have that big an effect, right? Or they don't do that much harm or that much good. And this has been true of many school choice programs on average.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't jump from that to then saying, well, we shouldn't care about test scores, right? Because when you look at individual schools, you see a much bigger, you know, you see much larger
variation.
Differences.
Yeah,
yeah, right. Variation, right? There's huge differences between schools, even within programs that may have very, very tiny or insignificant
right.
Differences on average. So that just seems to me to be a totally unwarranted leap. And that's more about their implications than anything else. But those are my two biggest criticisms.
And look, there's the other issue, just high school graduation. Do you think of that? Is that an attainment measure? Is it valid? Especially if you are studying high schools.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking at the impact of a KIPP middle school,
yeah.
then I think seeing the impact on high school graduation rates makes sense.
Right.
But if it's a KIPP high school, well, that's like another short-term indicator of what they're doing. And we know that high expectation schools sometimes drive up the dropout rate because some kids get discouraged.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that the other kids aren't learning more. All right. But by your measure then, all right, what you're most concerned about are programs that have significant negative effects on test scores and significant positive effects on something long-term.
Yeah.
And out of, they look at 36 different estimates. I mean, how many of those cases are we talking about?
It's incredibly small. And in fact, I love their tables, but honestly, just looking at them, you can see that actually, there is a correlation between these test score impacts and the other ones. But to answer your question, for example, if you look at ELA impacts and high school graduation impacts, they have 34 studies that looked at both of these things.
Yeah.
In three of those studies, there were negative significant impacts on ELA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's three, programs that maybe potentially policymakers would look to shut down.
Right.
Right. In one of those programs, there was this negative significant impact.
Yeah.
Right. So out of the 34, out of the 34 programs we're talking about here, there's only one where there's actually a true mismatch between ELA and graduation rates. It's possible that policymakers could shut down that program, and it's possible that that would be a mistake. But I don't think they have shut it down, and it's not clear that it's not 100% clear that it would be a mistake, right? So, that's like 3% of choice programs that we're even talking about there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my biggest question is what is the problem we're trying to solve here?
Yeah.
You want to jump in?
Yeah. No, yeah. And right. And the good news for school choice people is that in most of these studies, which don't include some of the most recent, ones of the big large scale programs, but most of these studies, the results are positive on all counts. Now, not always statistically significant, for as you say, sometimes because of sample size issues, other things, but generally positive. So it's like, where's the mismatch? There's not that many negative findings out there for there to be this huge mismatch. Yes. What is the problem we are trying to solve? That's a good question.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alyssa.
There was some there was some slogan that sounded like that I was going to reference, and yeah. I don't know.
We have a lot of problems to solve. This may not be one of them that we need to work on.
Oh, it's
about.
A Parks and Rec reference. I'm done.
Okay. All right. Hey, so much more to say, and we have said it. People can check it out on the blog. But thank you. I'm encouraged, David, that I'm not crazy here.
I don't think you're crazy.
You are working very close, working away on your PhD, and I do not have the research credentials of Professors Wolf and Hitt and McShane, as they like to point out. But I'm glad to hear that I'm not completely out of my mind when I say that there's something very wrong about the way they did this review.
When you can look at the tables and you can see the correlation with your naked eyes, there's a problem.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, David. That is all the time we've got for this week. Until next week.
I'm Alyssa Schwenk.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.